Hello there. Welcome back to our exploration of the Gospel according to Mark. We're commencing this time in chapter 4. And here we're going to see the servant showing his servants the principles attached to the sowing of the word of the kingdom. Now, in this entire chapter, you have to be very careful, because so often the parables used simply to teach the art of sowing the word of the kingdom are misused and preached upon as being parables of different kinds of Christians and different kind of things. But it's very evident here that in the entire chapter what is being discussed is simply the sowing of the word of the kingdom. And it opens up by telling us that Christ is going to do this in parables. And he began again to teach by the seaside. And there was gathered unto him a great multitude, so that he entered into a ship and sat in the sea, and the whole multitude was by the sea on the land. And he taught them many things by parables, and said unto them in his doctrine, Listen, behold, there went out a sower to sow. So the first thing we discover is that anyone, the entire multitude, can hear a parable. Then we're being shown that the parables are not just simply stories, but they are being taught, and they contain doctrine. Very often, the preachers and teachers feel that it's wrong to tell a story. Some preachers are even accused of being storytellers. But Christ was a master storyteller. And each of these parables were teaching and contained doctrine. But not everyone could understand them. Because we read in verse 9, He that said unto them, He that had ears to hear, let him hear. Now that almost sounds superfluous. What are their ears for other than to hear? But there's a sense in which you can hear noise in the atmosphere, but don't really understand what you're hearing. I learnt this from my own children. If I ever spun round to them in the kitchen and said, Did you hear me? They'd say quite honestly, Yes. But I soon cottoned on and began to say to them as I spun round, Did you understand me? Then they would say no, and we'd have to go through the matter again. And we notice in verse 10 that when he was alone, they that were about with him with the 12 asked of him the parable. And he said unto them, Unto you, those who are his disciples and followers, it is given to know the mystery of the kingdom of God. But unto them that are without, all these things are done in parables. So the next thing we understand about parable teaching is that his doctrine is a mystery to those who are not committed to being his disciples and following him and having their spiritual ears opened by God. It is a mystery. Now that should sound a warning bell right away, that we seem to think that if we have the most intelligent, logical, biblical teaching to make the gospel understood, even modern translations to make it easier, then the people will automatically say, well, of course, now we understand and believe. No, they won't. Because spiritual heavenly truths are a mystery and are only revealed to those who have spiritual eyes opened, because their heart's attitude to God is correct. For we read in verse 4, that seeing they may see and not perceive, and hearing they may hear and not understand, lest at any time they should be converted and their sins should be forgiven them. Now, that almost comes as a shock, and begs the question, isn't Jesus into evangelism Doesn't he want people converted? Why would he teach in parables things that are mysterious so that as the people listen, yes, logically, they hear, they understand the words, but they never really get through to the deeper meaning. And Jesus gives the answer, just in case they get converted and their sins should be forgiven. Well, isn't that his ministry? Ah, only if the soul is seeking for him with the whole heart. Remember that there is that promise from the Old Testament, that if a soul shall seek for me with the whole heart, it will find me. And of course that begs the question, what is the whole heart? Well, scriptures tell us, and the word soul and heart are interchangeable, that the heart and soul consists of your mind that thinks, your will that acts, and your emotions that react. So if a person is only intellectually seeking God, they're not going to get there. The person who is emotionally attracted to truth, they get feelings from hearing the gospel, but never apply their mind to understand it or their will to obey it. They don't get there either. Then you have the person who may exercise an act of will, but they don't know what about. They don't understand it, nor do they love it enough to do it. They're just making an act of will, a decision, a choice. Now this can be clearly seen in the ministry. You get the people that will sit there and give you the theology perfectly well. They understand it all, talk about it all, but they never get there. They're not born again. Then you have the people who love going to church. That's an emotion. They love the feeling, the atmosphere, the songs, the lifting up of the heart and feelings, the closeness to God. And when the preacher says, Jesus died for you, that's how he loved you. Would you love him back? And they say, yes, yes, Jesus, I love you. But you can ask a person like that years later, what did he do for you? And they haven't an intellectual clue. They were just stirred emotionally by an act of love by one man who died on a cross, and they responded with an emotion. And you get the person that goes to the meeting, and they're not there mentally, not even emotionally. They're looking around, they're counting the light bulbs, they're thinking of something that they wanted to do next week, or thinking of some story or film and they've seen in the past. They're just not there, and suddenly the preacher bangs the pulpit and states, you have got to make your mind up. You have a choice to make tonight. You cannot sit in the fence. You must say yes or no to Jesus. And suddenly they find themselves saying, oh boy, there's a decision to be made here tonight. I wonder what the rest are doing. And when they see other people respond, they think, well, looks like it must be pretty decent if they're all going for it. I'll go for it too. And very often on an impulse, without understanding or even loving what's being talked about, because they weren't even there mentally or emotionally, they make a choice. Now, all of these people never really find their Christianity working. And when you say to them years later, did you ever make a decision? Use your choice. They say, yes. Tell you the time and the place in the meeting where I said yes. Then you say, about what? They don't know. You'll have the people that tell you they understand the Bible from cover to cover, but it's never really become a reality. They never loved it to do it. Then you get those people who, unless there is a atmosphere, and they've always got to keep going back to where they can get the atmosphere and the feeling, they feel they have no faith. Because they've never trusted in the word, because they don't know it. The mind was never there. Now, it's interesting that a parable, and it's a revealed truth when it does come to you, this chapter tells us it comes with a responsibility. And that is that any revealed truth is not just simply to give you revealed truth, but it's also to to equip you to go out and share that truth with others. And if you don't share it, you don't get any more to share. You show me a Christian with very limited knowledge. You show me a Christian who received truth, but never passed it on. Because we read in verse 21, and he said unto them, is a candle brought to be put under a bushel or under a bed, and not to be set in a candlestick? For there is nothing hid which shall not be manifested, neither was anything kept secret, but that it should come abroad. If any man have ears to hear, let him hear. And he said unto them, pay attention to what you hear. With what measure you give it out again, it shall be measured to you. And unto you that hear shall more be given. For he that hath, to him shall be given, and he that hath not, from him shall be taken even that which he hath. So any truth that you do receive is not just to give you an intellectual, spiritually fat head of knowledge. It's in order that every facet of it is given away again to others. The best gift you can give to any pastor, preacher, teacher, is that if you have a revelation through God ministering to you through them, that you go and give it away. Oh, don't fuss about copyright. There is no such thing as a copyright on the Word of God. Men may write sermons, and they will even tell you from the pulpit that they were inspired by the Spirit and they received the Word from the Spirit. Well, if they did, the copyright belongs to the Spirit, not to the man that received it, put it down and gave it out. And I certainly know in my own ministry, I'm thrilled to bits to think that there's something I've said that was so winged home by the Spirit to a heart that they felt it was worth repeating. Do it, and don't even mention the mere earthly instrument that God used to convey that truth to you. Your responsibility is to hear the word and give it out. In the years of my ministry, I've never once dried up of new information to minister, because God has been faithful to keep showing me new things I've never seen before. For each one I get, I give away as fast as I can. Never be afraid to do that. Don't stick your light under a bucket, under a bed, while you're sleeping on the bed. It's just wasted. And remember what he said. If you get it and give it, you get more to give. Get it, keep it, you get no more to give. That's why a lot of Christians are poor. They've never given it away. Now, when we come to the first parable, the parable of the sower, here you're seeing the sowing of the word. And we're told in verse 3, behold, there went out a sower to sow. And it came to pass as he sowed, some fell by the wayside, and the fowls of the air came and devoured it up. Some fell on stony ground, where it had not much earth, and immediately it sprang up, because it had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, it was scorched, and because it had no root, it withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no fruit. And other fell on good ground, and did yield fruit that sprang up and increased, and brought forth some 30, some 60, some 100. Now this is Jesus' teaching, so listen carefully. He is telling us that each time the word is sown in a field, three parts of that sowing never comes to anything. Now if you don't listen to that and believe that, each time you faithfully sow the word in a field, if you don't see a 100% response, you'll start blaming your pastor for not teaching you enough, your Sunday school teacher for not educating you enough, the people who are responsible for education in the art of evangelism keeping something from you because you're doing your utmost, you're sowing the word, but you're not seeing the harvest. it would appear that the majority of what you're doing is achieving nothing. Well, don't be surprised. Jesus is telling us here, three parts never reach fulfillment. Only one good part. Now that's also a promise. That in every sowing, there will be that which will be fruitful. And the variation of the fruitfulness is also indicated, some 30, some 60, some 100. Not everybody receives the word in a similar capacity. There's differences of reception to the word that's sown in their hearts. Don't forget that. So the faithful Sunday school teacher ministering to 30 kids, finding one in 30 becoming a Christian, is just as successful as a big evangelist with 33,000 people in the auditorium and finding 3,000 come forward as inquirers and some of the 3,000 becoming Christian. That also is just as similar a success. One always seems to assume, he preached and 3,000 got converted. No, they didn't. They were inquirers. Some got converted. But even 3,000 out of 33,000 isn't 1%. And Jesus said, when I return, shall I find faith on the earth? And he also stated, it's a narrow gate that leads to life. Few there be that find it. It's a broad gate that leads to destruction, and the majority go in there. Now, listen to what Jesus is saying, so that you don't keep accusing yourself of being a poor witness. Just be faithful. Distribute the revelation of truth you receive. And once you've sown the seed in the soil, it is a matter between the seed, the soil, and the rain from heaven. You've done your job. All too often, we feel we've got to keep going back to the field, digging up the seed, see if something's happening, put it back in, give it more water, yell at it, shout at it, press and nag for a reaction. Stop that. Relax. You watch the farmers. They scatter it. They leave it. Back to the kitchen, feet up in the agar, have a cup of coffee. There's nothing they can do. They have to leave the seed, the soil, and the rain from heaven to do the rest. That's your responsibility fulfilled. Once you have done that. And remember this too. Sometimes soil needs attention before it's sown with seed. And one of the missing ministries that's not pointed to very often is the faithful believer who in their contact with the unbelieving are simply God's instruments for getting the rubbish off the ground. Clearing the boulders that are huge problems as to why a person wouldn't even begin to listen. One classic example is the person who will tell you that, oh, I would never go to church and listen to anything about Jesus. Why? Well, let's see, it was the great-great-great-grandfather's auntie's sister's brother's wife's daughter who wanted to sing in a cathedral choir and the vicar wouldn't let her. Now, you wouldn't believe it. There's no question as to whether the girl could sing or not. But that hurt to a family was carried on traditionally for generations as a reason for not believing. You have to deal with that and bring them back to the reality of their own personal life today before it will ever receive any kind of seed. So there is a ministry of preparing the heart to receive the word. And if that's your ministry, Do it with all your heart. Don't worry about somebody else coming in to sow the seed, or somebody else later coming in to reap it. You're part of the process. You're a link in the chain of the salvation of a soul. Now Jesus gives us the interpretation of this parable. In verse 14, the sower sows the word. There it is, that's all it is. You're simply scattering truth. And these are they by the wayside, which, where the word is sown, when they have heard, and in all of the cases of the seed we will look at being sown, it falls into soil that hears it, receives it, but it doesn't come to fruitfulness. So there's nothing wrong with the hearing. Stop trying to shout and make it more powerful. Stop trying to force power into the word. Just say it. Where the word is sown, but when they have heard, Satan comes immediately and takes away the words that were sown in their hearts. Now this is the wayside soil, hard-packed path around the field. Instead of walking across the crop, walk round the edge. Now anything sown on that just never makes an entry. Another gospel tells us he snatches it out of their mind in case they would understand and believe. In other words, this is the person who might love what they're hearing, but they don't understand it. This is that part of the soul that's not being applied to the search for God. They need to be worked on. That ground needs attention to open it up, break it up, make it capable of receiving the word. Don't try to force a growth there. Leave it. Go back to preparing it. Secondly, and these are they likewise which are sown in stony ground, who when they have heard the word, immediately receive it with gladness. Now there's the emotional soil. It's a gladness. Gladness is an emotion. Receiving it gladly. They have an emotional response. They don't necessarily understand it. Nor are they going to do it. Because they have no root in themselves and so endure for a time. Afterwards, when affliction or persecution arises for the word's sake, immediately they are offended. Now that kind is very deceptive, because you see the emotional response, yes, yes, to Jesus. And you think, oh boy, we've got a convert here, because it does send down roots, send up shoots, have leaves. But it's when the time of testing comes, it just shrivels away. Don't blame the word. Don't blame the seed. That's a problem of the soil underneath. There is a hard, rocky heart. And these are they that are sown among thorns, such as hear the word. Nothing wrong with the hearing. And the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches and the lust of other things entering in chokes the word and it becomes unfruitful. You wouldn't credit it, but there are people who prefer problems and the cares and troubles and riches of this world rather than to turn to Christ. Because one thing about people who have problems is they get an awful lot of attention. If they turn to Christ, then Christ deals with their problems. Nobody pays any more attention to them because you're now normalized. You can get out and get on with life and be responsible and be a help to others. And some people just cannot exercise their will to make a clear-cut decision to move away from the things of this life for self and give their heart to Christ. This is the person who will not exercise their choice. They want the best of both worlds. They come to nothing either. And these are they which are sown in good ground, such as hear the word and receive it, and bring forth fruit, some 30, some 60, some 100. Now remember that. Not everybody receives the word with this total capacity. There are simple believers who come to a knowledge through that word sown that they are redeemed, and they have a simple way of serving Christ all their life. They're not all going to be intellectual, theological presenters of the word. Allow each person to live within the limit, and you live within yours, and don't push people that don't have your height of understanding to reach it. And don't try to go above your limit to somebody above you. Be content with what God has revealed to you. The next parable, of course, is in verse 26. And he said, so is the kingdom of God, as if a man should cast seed in the ground, and should sleep and rise night and day, and the seed should spring up and grow up, he doesn't know how. For the earth brings forth fruit of herself, first the blade, then the ear, and after that the full corn in the ear. But when the fruit is brought up forth, immediately he puts in the sickle, because the harvest is come. Now here's the growth of that hidden word. It's in the heart, and it grows. You don't know how, so don't try to know how. All too often we're like people trying to bake a pie. We keep opening the oven door, poking the pastry to see if something's happening. Leave it alone. Farmers go and paint the barn. Do something else. But it's all happening underneath. And in the right time, it'll blossom forth and come into fruitfulness. It's guaranteed once that word of life is received in a heart that's seeking it mentally, willfully and emotionally, you won't stop its growth. It's going to come into life. And he said, whereunto shall we liken the kingdom of God, or with what shall we compare it? It's like a grain of mustard seed, which when it is sown in the earth, is less than all the seeds that be in the earth. But when it is sown, it grows up and becomes greater than all herbs, and shoots out great branches, so that the fowls of the air may lodge under it, the shadow of it. And so we're discovering now that once that word is sown in human hearts, it will come to fruition. And it will develop into all of those good plants being his kingdom, his, just like a big tree from a tiny seed. But notice there's all sorts of birds resting in its branches. They're not the tree. They're just living under the shadow of it. There's an awful lot of things hanging around the reality that are not part of the reality. Don't be afraid of that. It will grow. It will come to being a huge kingdom on this earth. But there's an awful lot of nominal people, just like crows, resting in the branches, thinking they're part of it. Don't worry about that. You be faithful. And with many such parables speak he the word unto them as they were able to hear it. But without a parable speak he not unto them. And when they were alone, he expounded all these things to his disciples. And the same day when the evening was come, he said unto them, let's pass over to the other side. And when he sent away the multitude, he took them even as he was in the ship, and there were also with him other little ships. And there arose a great storm of wind, and waves beat into the ship, so that it was now full. And he was in the rear of the ship, asleep in a pillow. And they woke him and said to him, Master, carest thou not that we perish? I like this. God incarnate in a physical body on the earth could be tired enough to want to have a sleep. So stop pushing yourself beyond your limit. If God in a body can be tired, I'm not ashamed to be tired. Even when he sat on the well at Sychar, he sat there weary. He didn't pretend to be full of energy. He was where he was, tired. But God enabled him to minister to the woman within his limit. And he arose, rebuked the wind, and said unto the sea, peace be still. The wind ceased, there was a great calm, and he said unto them all, why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared exceedingly, and said one to another, what manner of man is this, that even the wind and sea obey him? Maybe one of these days it will catch on to them. This is the very God of God on the earth. But he's been teaching them much. He's had his sleep, but he has his power over everything. And they are amazed at him. He's teaching them the art of serving, even if it means being tired.